on that on. And so when did you and your wife first go over there?
We were over there in October of 74 by radio.
By radio? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Preacher came through Dallas, Texas. Went to a church I know. I knew the usher of the church very well, Jack. He called me Sunday afternoon. Said, we have a preacher here from Haiti, Brother Sullivan. And we know you're a missionary. You travel to Mexico, different places. Thought you might be interested. I said, well, I don't speak French. He said, well, he says, you don't have to. As we have French announcers to interpret as you speak. Lower the volume. Good. Anyway, we made our trip over there a year later, in October 75, to check on the radio. At that time, the preacher said the cost is only a dollar a day on radio station 4BOC, covers the entire Caribbean. I said, for a dollar a day, I'll go mission work anywhere.
Yeah, no kidding.
So we stayed down there a year. Decided to go check it out. October 75, we came over there and checked at the radio station. Fine, everything great. Except the man was dying with AIDS, we had to pray for him. But we left there, went touring in Haiti, met a Haitian couple, had about 7 orphans, and told my wife a story that they were Christians. The land belonged to the voodoo priest. Found out they were Christians, said, tear your building down and get off my property. So they came to us. Asked my wife, said, well, can you help us? My wife said, can we help them? Of course. I'm going to say yes. Well, so I said, okay, tell you what, you can tear the building down and move it, and I'll send you $1,000 in the next 30 days. I'll go back, raise some funds. So I sent him the money. He said, okay. He said, let's go back again, check on it. Came back a few months later, sure enough, it's moving.
So that was that land that's right there out of Port-au-Prince right now?
Mm-hmm.
You paid $1,000 for it?
$1,000.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. High.
And that was high then?
Yeah, but then. So, we got started with him. Next day, another couple met us. They were building 3 orphanages. And we got them self-supporting after a while. Some preacher came by we knew in Dallas and let me have it. But then we bought a property, finally. After all those years in Haiti, 75 to 82, 7 years. First 7 years, we didn't even have a car. Riding the taps.
How'd y'all get around?
Those taps. We had to jump in the little tap. Ride with us. Hot, sweaty, stinky. But then we finally got a car over there. God bless us. So in 1982, we found that property where we are now. For sale. We bought the property after an agreement. Paid $25,000 for it. Back then. But, like the preacher said, retired. The wall cost $25,000.
Right.
Not counting the land of the mission house. It was a good deal for us. So we bought it. Started immediately. Built the church. Doug Austin is right beside the side. 1982. Been in that location now about 33 years. For the orchards, the schools. Quite a task. In the meantime, we built 4 more churches with the goal that we are there in Haiti to spread the gospel to the unreached people in the mountains. Not in the city, but out in the mountains. and build churches out there.
Uh-huh.
And so we, meantime, we built those churches. And we had to have pastors. We paid the pastors, paid for the building, construction, paid for the school teachers. One time we had 45 school teachers on staff.
Wow.
The budget back then was around $7,000 a month. Then the earthquake came, knocked down one church in Jack Mountain. I saw it damaged the other church up on Big Island. They're trying to rebuild it now. You saw that?
Yeah, yeah. They're trying to get that one rebuilt. But you didn't have any damage there at the headquarters, did you?
None. Well built. A lot of steel, a lot of concrete. Nothing moved.
Yeah, no, it looks good. So how long has Pastor Ely been with you?
He came to our Bible school. We started in 83, stayed 2 years, graduated. He and Anthony met and got married.
Yeah.
We're on top of Dagon Mountain, where Nazon is. Now, we built a clapboard church. And then we needed a supervisor. So we called him in, asked him to be in some watching things, taking care of kids. He said he would. Then was 34 years. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it, 34 years.
Wow. And he's really proven his worth.
Very much so. Very much so.
Y'all consider him and his wife y'all spiritual children?
Son and daughter. When I take the pulpit on Sunday morning, I always tell them, Brother Ely and I have last different names, but we still have the same father. And he's my son in the family. They say, your son? Yeah, my son. He always says, Papa Sullivan. All the kids call me Papa.
What was one of the more difficult seasons that you had there in Haiti? Was it, besides the earthquake? I know the earthquake was probably the most tumultuous, but what was the most difficult season that you had there during your ministry there?
Yes. Different. After the earthquake, one of our churches down in Okai was damaged but got rebuilt. You saw that.
Yeah.
The one in Jack Mill was destroyed completely. Same way up there in Dagon. Like that. It's been a long, slow process of trying to get things back together again. And I started up there on Dagon Mountain building, but the one in Jack Mill was ripping. Nothing.
But nobody was hurt?
No, it was 5 o'clock on a Friday. We didn't have anything. Nobody was hurt or done.
Wow. But it was pretty devastating to the country.
I still haven't recovered. Still haven't recovered. But a lot of people were really killed. Quarter of a million people killed in 60 seconds.
How many? Quarter of a million in 60 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's how long the quake lasted. Then they spent feverishly for weeks trying to pick up the dead bodies and get the stench out of the city.
Wow.
Took those big plows, tractors, made big holes in the ground. Garbage truck, pick up the bodies, just bring them out and dump them.
My God.
No funeral. Wow. And the smell was terrible. Then the cholera got loose there on account of sanitation. And this was a nightmare. People dying because simple thing, like water, clean water. It was a massive area. We survived that. During that first day after the quake, we had 1,092 people in our front yard wanting food, clothing, and shelter.
Wow.
And that was immediate. And so we took everything we had and then went every place we could get trying to keep those people alive. They stayed there 3 months.
Oh my goodness, they were there 3 months?
3 months. Edith said it was a terrible thing. Terrible thing. Sanitation.
Oh man.
They just see white paper everywhere over the yard.
Wow.
It was said that was the worst part of it. No sanitation. No hygiene.
Yeah. Not much organization. People trying to survive.
Living in tents. We got a hold of Franklin Graham, Bill. He presented many, many tents up there to help us out. But it was a struggle.
Wow. So obviously, I mean, before the earthquake, you had the four churches, three schools.
Before the earthquake,
uh-huh,
we had five churches, and five schools.
In the one orphanage, or more than one orphanage?
Just one orphanage.
One orphanage. There at the base.
Yeah, that's our base.
So you had five orphanages, or five schools, and five churches, and one in the one in the base in the headquarters orphanage.
That's right. And we had to have a church in Haiti. You gotta have a school.
Oh, you do have to have a school.
Mm-hmm. So we had five churches.
Yeah, five schools.
During the week, we had to turn into a school.
Okay. That's part of the governmental regulations, is you have to have a school?
I have to have a school. And you have to pay the teachers.
Uh-huh. If they can get you to do it, they don't have to do it.
Nothing. That's the name of the game.
Right? Yeah.
Let the missionaries pay the bill. Mm.
So obviously, the immediate mission is to get back to that. Five churches, five schools, an orphanage.
Yes.
But what is it that...
Like I told Lydia, we didn't come here just to build an orphanage and raise kids. We came here to preach the gospel to the people in the mountain areas. Build seven churches. I had my mind.
Seven churches.
Build seven churches.
Okay.
Like the Apostle Paul did, Asia Minor.
Okay.
He built seven churches and took the whole Mediterranean. I thought, we'll build seven churches and take all of them.
Well, so that's still the mission.
Yeah.
Still the mission, still to build, have seven churches.
Seven churches.
Seven schools. Seven churches.
Seven schools.
Seven schools. Yeah. And maybe at least two orphanages.
At least wouldn't hurt.
Yeah. Maybe one what down there at Jacmel, that one that southern.
That'd be the best one.
Yeah, because they're kind of far apart.
Yeah, long distance apart. And a bigger shirt.
Yeah.
That's the best one.
Yeah, he looks like he's good. They got a good job going on down there.
That's right.
Good leadership. And they have a heart. They want an orphanage.
Yes, they do. They need one. All right.
So that's the task is to get everything back where you had it, and then the mission is to get it where you wanted it, which is seven churches, seven schools, and two orphanages.
Whoever takes over have a vision for the future. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
It's one thing to have an orphanage of kids. But the real mission is to reach the people.
Right.
In the mountain. The unreached people. Unreached. In high, difficult places.
Yeah.
And building a church on a mountainside?
It's difficult.
You are going to learn something. I'll tell you, you will learn something new you've never done before.
Yeah.
Materials. Bought in Port-au-Prince. Trucked down to the mountainside. Unloaded at the base of the mountain. Trucks can't go. Hire people, hire bureaus, hire donkeys.
Anything you can get.
Take the bricks and the cement and water up on the hillside.
Oh, you have to take the water up there too.
Yep. The water. No cement without water.
No. There's no rivers or streams up there on that area?
Not on the top.
Not on top.
So somebody said one time, missionary friend came over, why do you build these churches in the most inacceptable, unreachable places? I said, that's where 2/3 of the people live.
Hmm.
And that's what we're here for.
Is it still that way? 2/3 still live up in the mountains, or are they moving down?
You've got one big city.
Yeah, okay.
What up in 3 million. You got some cities up in the north, some south. All those kind of small. But the bulk of the nation of 9 million is up in the mountains.
Up in the mountains.
There's 6 million people that can't live in Port-au-Prince.
Hmm.
I'm giving you this stuff.
You're right. We're going to learn some things, aren't we?
I did. And still learning. Still learning. That's an amazing thing. Every month, something different comes up.
So how have you fared with the government there? Have you had good favor? Or?
We have no troubles with the government. If they come by, we're friendly with them. If they make, quote, suggestions,
yeah,
we accept them.
You accept those suggestions?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And Ely is very good at dealing with people, nations. He knows how to deal with the government people. So you've had no trouble with the government.
So you all maintain good favor with the government?
Favor with the government.
Really? Praise God.
Been there 34 years and still here.
Wow. And they've given y'all a pretty good status, haven't they?
Yes, sir. They passed a law under Aristide that all pastors in Haiti must have a college degree. And so all of our pastors have been with us for years. They had a Bible school from us, but that's not a college.
Right, it's not a college.
And so they came to our place and said, your pastors, have they been to college? No, we haven't. No more pastors. But he said, but wait a minute. They went here for 15 years now. And so the government considered and said, they've had all these years of experience, we're going to be pastors. But now then, if you be a pastor, you got to go to college.
Even through y'all's organization, they still have to have their college degree?
Didn't have to have it.
But they do now?
Now they do. In all of Haiti.
So any new pastors that the organization brings on, they'll have to have their college degree.
Unless they become good friends.
Become what?
Good friends.
Oh.
Somebody.
Yeah.
In customs or the government.
Gotcha.
So far we've had no problem.
Okay. Well, that's amazing.
I say it's a learning experience. Learning experience. Not like good old America.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure everything is different trying to get something accomplished over there than over here. So what is the to you, what is the condition, the spiritual condition of Haiti right now? Is it
Haiti is still Haiti, and the people there, most of them, I'd say half of them, claim some sort of Christianity.
Okay, so half of them consider themselves Christian.
If I go to the Catholic Church once right. or twice, I'll go to the assembly. But they do have a hunger. And they're very reachable. And they're very faithful once they come in. So it still needs a lot of evangelistic churches.
1974, you're introduced. That was when I was born, 1974.
Wow.
That was the year I was born.
Woo.
So, 1974, God introduced you to it. You just haven't been able to get away from it.
No. I have a story behind that story, too.
Oh, yeah?
I thought, I've been on the radio in Dallas about 12 years. Traveling, evangelistic, TV, radio, all of us, a whole ball of wax. And then the preacher came up about having a radio station in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. I said, yeah, that's what I need. I need to get a radio station in Haiti. Yeah, that's good. That was a carrot. That was the carrot.
Was it? That was the carrot at the end of the stick, huh?
That got me into Haiti.
Uh-huh.
And then the orphans showed up. And there it went. Babies, babies. Mm. I said, okay, I see what happened.
That was pretty slick of God to.
I told my friend, I said, my assignment was in Honolulu, Hawaii, feeding 100 million.
Yeah, people. Absolutely.
That was my assignment. I said, that angel hit the wrong button with Haiti.
Yeah.
He said, Honolulu. I get that guy.
They both still got beaches, but not quite the same.
Not quite the same. No way.
What's the, in your mind, what's the story that stands out the most of all the kids that have been through your orphanage and your program? Is there one that stands out the most that says, This epitomizes our success. This one story.
Be a young boy.
Okay.
About 8 years old. Name was Purnell.
Purnell? Okay.
He came out of the mountains, you know, mom and papa. And we separated. He came through our doors and asked Ely to have a home. Ely said, where's your mom and daddy? Said, they're going up the mountain. I don't know. I had nobody. No family. So we took him in. He had a little dirty bag full of dirty clothes. We had to throw them away. But then he came in, cleaned him up. Bathed him, looked good, put clothes on him, a right here with a boy. Next morning he had breakfast, he ate everything on the plate. Same way at lunch, everything. His mind was like this. There may not be any food the next morning.
Yeah.
Or the next, may not be none the next time. But eat all he could. But after about a week, he got adjusted. Be food there every morning. Then, years went by, he went to school with us, and they noticed that he was very intelligent, very good in his studies.
Yeah.
Student that loved his books. And he was getting along about 12, 13. My wife said, you know, let's do Purnell something like that. Let's just sit down. Tell him he can be an assistant teacher, help the teacher. He was thrilled to do that with him.
Yeah.
He got so good at that, very good, a couple of years. we made him a teacher.
Oh my.
Which shows he was really prepared.
Yeah, very intelligent.
So when he graduated from high school, I asked him, what now, Cornell? You graduated. Are you going to get a good job in Port-au-Prince with a merchant? Or maybe in the government? Because I'm going to get a job, but I'm going to enroll in the University of Haiti. I'm going to college. I said, really? I'm going to work, and I'm going to pay my way through.
Okay.
And so, 1 year, I went down there. How you doing, Fidel? Got 1 year finished. I said, congratulations. Long story, short story, 4 years. You got a BA degree in business.
Wow, you got a business. You got what degree?
Business.
Business degree. Wow.
Yep. I said, congratulations, dude. You did good. Now then what? He said, oh, I've got another year to get a master's degree. I said, fine. You got a master's degree.
Wow.
Next thing we knew is teaching around private school. Then he went to university as a professor for a while. Taught.
Wow.
But then he got a better lucrative job in a private school.
Okay.
That's where he is now.
There in Haiti still?
Mm-hmm. Now he's got a wife and two boys. And fine.
Wow.
From a mountain kid to a professor.
Family and has a home. And
oh, very successful.
If he didn't show up on y'all's doorstep, he may not have survived.
And he still comes to church once in a while.
Yeah.
To see us. He remembers what it used to be. And how he...
So you remember showing up at the gate?
He remembers that.
Wow.
The most touching point in emotion is when one day a man knocked at the gate and kept knocking. He was in the mission now. And I said, Edie, go down there and see what that knocking on, what that man wants. So we went down there, Edie did, brought him back up. And I said, what can we do for you, sir? He said, my name is Joseph, whatever you are. He said, I come to get my nephew. I'm taking him to Florida. Really? Yes, yes, I have a nephew. I want him. I want to go back to Florida with me. What's your name? Cornell. I said, you are Cornell's uncle? I am his uncle. I want him. I said, let's call Cornell then. So Cornell came in, and I said, Cornell, this man is maybe your uncle. I want to take you to Florida. What are you going to do? He said, are you really my uncle? Yes, I am. And then, I'm your nephew. Yes. I come to take you to Florida with me. He said, I don't think I'm going with you. Why? I've been here all these years. You never write a letter to me. You never send any money to support me. You don't do anything for me. No, I am staying with mom and pop.
Wow.
You're about 13.
Wow.
But that was a good shot for him now.
What an intelligent young man.
He made a good choice.
Wow.
Very good choice.
Well, thank you for everything you've done there.
Oh, man. You look back and say, haven't done enough.
No. It's going to take a team of people to do what you did. So.
Well, it looks like I got a team.
Well, I hope so. I hope we can live up to the standard.
Got a visionary team, and that's what's important.
As long as the vision stays on the same track, we'll lay more tracks. That's fine.
That's
you started it in the right direction. We just want to make sure that it finishes the race. That's all.
That's good.
So
I think that anybody that goes to Haiti is blessed indeed.
Yes.
I've been blessed all my life going to Haiti. After the last 7 years, it was just heaven on earth. Friends are coming in. And then all of a sudden, earthquake, disaster, start having a lean budget, And boy, that's something else.
It's hard.
You can't be lean and heavy.
No, you can't. No, you can't.
There's no way to trim the budget.
No.
No way to get out of it. You gotta produce.
Yeah.
And that will keep you busy.
Well.
That will keep you busy.
Well, it's, you know, the word says it's better to give than receive, and I think more blessed than to give than receive. And I think there's such a blessing in having a life devoted to something to give yourself to rather than trying to get as much as you can. So
that's true.
I hope, you know, many hands make light work. I hope we're put together a good group of churches and men and women that all can shoulder that. And like I said, I think it's going to take a pretty capable team to continue what you started. So they're all excited about it. We're all excited about it. We can't wait to get over there. They're all can't wait to get over there. And we just thank you for laying the groundwork, doing everything you've done, and giving us an opportunity to give of ourselves and lay something out for the kingdom. And we wouldn't have a clue what to do if we tried to go over there and do something. So what you've accomplished is worth a weight of gold to these men and women. So
good.
So thank you.
I appreciate anybody that's got a decision to go to Haiti.
I bet you do.
I'm saying because that's God called people.
Yeah. It is.
Doing a God called purpose.
Yeah, it's definitely a prime place for the gospel.
Yes.
In its fullness.
Yes. A lot of them settle down in the big city, but that's not where they are.